Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. It is a Canucks game day. They're on the road in L.A. First of a back-to-back set. Kings tonight, Ducks tomorrow down in Southern California. Let's hear from Canucks coach Rick Tocchet.
Lineup.
Yeah, so Quinn's, you know, probably going to be a game time. He's skating out there today, and he's going to go pretty hard to see how he felt.
And so I guess from that, there's sort of cascading options in terms of what else happens on the blue line. With Mancini, who debuted, or a guy like Carson Soucy, I mean, they were sort of skating together on a pair, so that would imply that if Hughes... I practiced yesterday, that would imply it. What do you need to see more of from Mancini, and what does Soucy need to do to sort of get back in the lineup?
Yeah, well, I really, first of all, you do the pauses. Like, I've liked Junior Pedersen's game. I don't want to, you know, I don't, it's not like he's going to play every game, but I don't want to keep yanking him out. I think he's done a nice job, so you want to see the arrow keep going, so I think it's important that he stays in. And then from there, that sixth spot is competition. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, we've got, I don't know how many games, 20-something games left, and, you know, we need people to get going, and that's what happens, competition. So hopefully when you have that competition, it ignites some guys.
Lankinen tonight. She loves, with his good performance in Utah, did he do enough to be a guy you'll sort of plan to go to tomorrow?
Yeah, I think he's tracking the right way, even in Abbotsford, and to see him coming, you know, he had some work against Utah. I saw a difference than I did at the start of the year. That's what I didn't see him much this year, obviously, just at the start of the year. I saw a calmer goalie. So it was almost like a little bit, hey, playoff type of style. Like I don't think they're scared to play him against Anaheim at all.
You do see Hughes back in the lineup. What kind of boost does it give the team, not just on the ice, but in the dressing room as well?
Well, obviously, dressing room, you know, he's a great kid, and he loves the game. I think that's contagious, but obviously on the ice, gets the puck to the net, creates off the rush, gets the puck to players in good spots. I mean, you know, he's a big part of our team. But saying that, we just, you know, we it's just not Huggy. You know, I need other guys to get pucks to the net. We got to attack the interior and things like that. He just promotes that. You know, Hughes just promotes that every shift. So, and it, like I said, it's contagious.
And kind of going off that, you've talked about wanting to see that full 60 minutes from your group on this road trip. How do you execute that tonight against LA?
Well, first of all, we just get back from the break, you know, having a pretty good record. And all of a sudden, the first two games, we're giving teams three power plays to start. I mean, Footy said it today, you know, you're overplaying guys, and all of a sudden the third period, we lost both games in the third period. Is that because of we're taxing? I don't know. But we can't take penalties. You can't take stupid penalties. And we got to start properly to give ourselves a chance, especially when you're struggling to score goals. I think there's more off the rush. I think guys are passing the puck way too early, and we're not getting three lanes at the blue line. You know, we have to have the courage to carry the puck through the middle of the ice, and then you can make your play. That's how you make teams play defense. So that was the message the last 2 days. So hopefully it transpires tonight.
Unfavorable night on the out-of-town scoreboard yesterday, and five games to go before the trade deadline. I'm sure you don't need to remind anybody about sort of the stakes, but how do you view what this back-to-back set means here?
Well, every game is huge. Like, and you have to have that mindset. But saying that, you can't live 24 hours a day. You know, somebody's going to lose, somebody's going to win every night. So it's unfortunately in 48 hours, things flip. You know, another 72 hours from now, something might flip again. So you got to be careful you play that game. You just got to play game to game, period to period. And you got to be careful of scoreboards watching. There's a lot of games left, a lot of points. I think you got to really worry about your game and our team game, and the other stuff will sort itself out.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media, including our own Thomas Drantz there before the game in LA tonight. And as we mentioned earlier, Hughes, a game time decision. You know, Tocchet gets into the on ice impact of Quinn Hughes, which is, of course, immense. Some interesting talk there as well about his choices on the blue line. And I know you expanded on this a little bit at The Athletic today as well, Drantzer, but, you know, the combinations yesterday from their practice in LA with, as you said, Soucy and Mancini together, and, you know, so, well, maybe both of those guys get in and DPD and Forbort are out, but it sounds like it will be Elias Pettersson and Derek Forbort in the lineup tonight. If Quinn Hughes isn't able to go, that opens up the door for one of Mancini or Soucy to potentially get in. But some pretty positive commentary about Elias Pettersson there from Rick Tocchet, basically saying not that he's a guaranteed to be in the lineup every night, or, you know, for the rest of the 25 games of this season, but with the way he's playing, they want to give him every opportunity to keep proving himself and make him a fixture in the lineup for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's warranted. Like, one thing about Pettersson that we've sort of seen too is, you know, part of what he's done pretty well, I think, is actually help hold pucks at the offensive blue line, right? Like, his pinches, because he plays heavy, because he's got a really good sense of when to go, he's actually had a positive, now sample small, of course, but he's actually had a positive impact on what this team generates from the back end. And that obviously matters a ton because this Canucks team doesn't generate much, right? So, like, one reason for me anyway, why I'd like to see Elias Pettersson stay in the lineup, why I think that sort of captioning of it, the idea that he's really a fixture, he'll be dealt with differently, the, you know, the competition for minutes kind of exempts him from it, right? I think there's, you know, I think one of the reasons that that matters is, for example, and this is a disturbing stat, by the way, okay, in terms of on-ice shots for, okay, so on-ice shots for per hour, number one, obviously, it's Quinn Hughes. And number two, it's obviously Filip Hronek. No other Canucks defender is over 25 shots an hour.
Yeesh.
On the Canucks blue line. Now, to put that into context, there are only, okay, there are only six teams in hockey. Nope, that's not even true. There are only three teams in hockey that generate fewer than 25 shots per hour. The Red Wings, the Blackhawks, and the Canucks. Okay, so we're talking every other Canucks defender other than Hughes and Hronek. The Canucks generate like the worst offensive team in the league, which might be them. It's actually Chicago, but they're second in terms of how many shots they actually generate, except Elias Pettersson, or Junior, as Tocchet calls him, who's at least at like 27, 28. So he's actually had something of an offensive impact. And I think it's mostly related to how comfortable he is making plays at the offensive blue line and what he's able to create actually as a, you know, a battering ram, sort of going down the wall, Cronwall style, although without leaving his feet, to sort of mess teams up on their breakout, their counter breakout when the Canucks are established in zone. Look, this player's played really good hockey. He should be in the lineup. It makes sense for the team to begin to see what they have on the blue line. And they're going to get Tom Volander soon.
Yeah.
And that's also going to change, I think, what you're looking at in terms of the complexion of this blue line. Then you're going to have real options. And for the first time in 15 years, that'll be the case. Now, it's too bad. Like, if the Canucks had Pettersson actually going, right, then we'd actually be somewhat excited because the Canucks would be able to match a rebuilt blue line with some elite forward skill. But, you know, right now, it's unfortunate because it's like this whack-a-mole thing where the team had really good center depth, but a patchwork blue line, and now they have patchwork forward depth and a blue line that actually looks pretty promising.
Yeah,
over,
has a,
you know, not just for the balance of this year.
Yeah, it has a chance to be really horizon. Interesting, I think, the blue line. Like, we still haven't seen it with Quinn Hughes, right? With Marcus and Elias Pettersson up and Quinn Hughes. We haven't seen that yet.
But, it, how much does it matter if you don't have juice? You know, it's...
How much does anything matter? I know. If you don't have juice, is life even worth living without juice? I don't know. But your point
grab
about
some Sunny D.
Love Kevin Bieksa.
The Canucks are the Canucks are like the Sunny D commercials, except they don't have the Sunny D. So it's just like
they've only got the cola, purple stuff,
milk, purple stuff.
But the point also about the options on the blue line, like I think that should inform what we expect from the deadline as well for them. Because all of a sudden, if Hughes is healthy and DPD is a fixture in the lineup on at least a semi-permanent basis, you've basically got now Forbert, Soucy, Mancini, Noah Juulsen, who's injured right now but still around, all those guys for one spot in the lineup. Your other five spots are basically spoken for. Then you have Velander hopefully coming towards the end of the year as well to factor into that. So you've got kind of a logjam, not just that you like the six guys who they can put out there, but you've got at least a logjam in terms of, you know, credible NHL bodies behind that as well. When you look at it in that light, like you've already got, you know, Mancini pushing for time. He's in competition with Carson Soucy as well. It becomes, to me, much, much more likely that we see, you know, Derek Forbort go out at the deadline, probably Noah Juulsen as well, if he's healthy. And it maybe even opens up the possibility of a Carson Soucy deal on top of that, because as you said, they do have all of a sudden credible options on defense. And that, I think, gives them the flexibility. It at least makes it like you don't have to really agonize over those decisions. You can just say, yeah, we got a pending UFA on the blue line. We're going to deal them at the deadline. And that might extend to Carson Soucy as well, given the depth they have now.
Yeah. And honestly, probably need to reallocate some of that Carson Soucy cap hit at this point, just given where this team has found itself. Right. And I mean, they're going to need to spend up front. Like, there's no question about that. They're going to need to spend up front. And, you know, that's going to be an essential part of this offseason. Like, they need so much more speed. I mean, I thought that was one of the more noticeable parts of the sort of weekend back-to-back, the what we saw out of the Canucks in Vegas and in Utah. It's just like, you know, players like Carlson and obviously Jack Eichel and obviously Cooley and on and on. You know, Utah looked so much faster down the middle of their center group than the Canucks did. And that's even with Philip Hedl bringing, you know, like maybe a Sunny D juice box, at least, to the juice party. And, you know, I do think there's like, that's going to have to be a priority for the Canucks to address. I mean, can you go into this summer and expect to get an elite talent at center? Probably not. I mean, maybe you get a chance to pitch Sam Bennett if you're lucky, but I mean, that's pretty much it. And even that might be a tough deal, right? Like, that's going to be a huge amount of cash for a really good player, Canadian hero at this point, right? No question. I will never again say anything even remotely negative about Sam Bennett, my favorite player ever now. But, you know, it's worth noting, he's never hit 50 points in his career in a season, right? So it's not like that's necessarily the answer either, given how severe this team's needs at center are. And, you know, right now you're going into this Kings game. We know Deneau, we know Kopitar. I mean, those guys aren't burners necessarily. In fact, they're not burners. But I mean, it's a mismatch.
Well, but they have
a mismatch.
But they have
Fiala against Anaheim,
right? Like, they have Fiala that brings that element on the wings that the Canucks are lacking. So you're right that they need the centers. But I also want, and this is part of the Besser thing I'm getting at too, right? With, well, is he the type of player they want to commit to? Like, you might have to look for it on the wings as well. The guys with that dynamic ability, you kind of have to look everywhere for it at this point.
Yeah. Well, and you can see it. I mean, you can see how different things look with like O'Connor and Hedl in the lineup, right? Or when they're on the ice, right? In their minutes, how this Canucks team can attack vertically. Also, you know, I think it has been more pronounced because we haven't seen Quinn Hughes, you know, flip the ice sheet individually the way that he's capable of. And that's inimitable, right? Like, he's the best in the league at it from the back end. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to need to reallocate some cap space. You're going to have to be careful about what you do on the back end. And I know we got to go because we got Books on the other side. So I'll stop talking.
All right. Thank you. Jason Pukula up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. Kintech footwear and orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Buchla going to join us here momentarily on the show, as he always does on a Wednesday. We're still recovering from an especially chaotic crossover earlier in the show. And we'll do the whiteboard in the final segment to wrap things up here on the show today, as it is, of course, a Canucks game day, taking on the LA Kings and looking for a pretty desperately needed 2 points to get back on the win column here out of the four back in the win column, I should say, coming out of the Four Nations break. And then, as you've pointed out, Drance, like, not necessarily as an easy game, or at least as easy as you would think, going up against the Ducks tomorrow either on the second half of the back-to-back.
No, Ducks have more points across their last 25 games. Like, when you said that thing about 25 games, you know, lots of teams can help. The Canucks have the 25th best record in hockey across the last 25 games. Like, there's lots of teams we don't think are good that have more points than the Canucks. The Ducks are among them. The Flames are among them, obviously. So, you know, the truth is that the Ducks have been playing like 560 point percentage hockey across their last 25 games. That's better than Vancouver. And in fact, it's top half of the league.
All right, now joining us, as mentioned, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL and our Wednesday regular here on the show, he is Jason Buchla. Buchla, thanks for doing this as always, man. How's it going?
Doing just fine, fellas. Thank you very much. The sun is out. I was just telling Lena the sun is out here in Ontario for a change after about 24 feet of snow last week. So life is better today.
It was. It felt like spring here in Vancouver. Sunny, high of like 13 today in the afternoon. So I can feel spring around the corner. It's very, very exciting. Okay, Brock Besser, probably the player most in the spotlight right now for the Vancouver Canucks. Obviously, the highest profile pending UFA they have going into the deadline. We continue to hear not a lot of traction on talks between the two sides. From your perspective, if you were in the Canucks front office, how would you be viewing Brock Besser? How comfortable would you be going long term? How would you be kind of evaluating and coming into this situation with the player right now?
I'm not comfortable going long term with the scenario. I guess it always comes down to dollars and cents. And if the fit is there financially, that makes sense. That what we want to play or pay for the player, I'd have the discussion. But I just, if we're getting into numbers that are going to be, you know, I don't know what you guys are hearing, or, you know, if it's going to be $8, $9 million a year type thing, I'm not buying that stock. And it's, no disrespect to Brock, I just don't see the fit long term. He's not going to get faster. He does what he does when he's going. He scores goals, and obviously he's got a good stick from between the dots and on the power play for slap or tips off slap shots and stuff like that, slap passes. But guys, he's not multidimensional, and for me that's not a fit going forward. So the question now becomes, where are we as an organization? Are we looking at as an own rental, or are we looking at him as a piece that you move out because we just can't gain consistent traction as a franchise this year? And we just got to, I don't want to say mail in the year because they're right there. I get it. But, you know, where are they going? It's really the question. And do you want to have that hanging over you going forward? Not sure. It just adds to a lot of layers of stuff that's been hanging over them all year long.
Yeah, for Besser, you know, he's kind of the quintessential, like, really good complementary player to me, right? Where he needs another player on his line to get him the puck in those dangerous situations and let him do his thing. And, you know, no coincidence, we've seen him play some of his best hockey and hit 40 goals last year playing alongside JT Miller on a regular basis. And I think that's always a tricky player to commit to when you're a team that doesn't have those star players that can help the guy, right? And right now, with Elias Pettersson doing what he's doing, the Canucks don't have that player up front. But it's also the kind of thing, as much as we can sit here and, you know, pick apart holes in Brock Besser's game, if you're a contender looking to buy this year and you do have those players already in your forward lineup, I would think Brock Besser would be a very attractive asset, especially considering what he did in the playoffs for the Canucks last season.
Yeah, I do too, and that's where you're stuck in a little bit of a holding pattern. If you do have any type of appetite to potentially extend Brock, and you want to see if your team makes playoffs, if he can come close to playing the same sort of game that he did last year, then, you know, maybe your appetite changes a little bit. There's two seasons, isn't there? There's games 1 to 82, and then there's the other. And if you think you're going to be a perennial playoff team and you know this is a player that can potentially help you in playoffs, then I guess you have to consider everything. But to your point, absolutely. I mean, if you're looking for a guy that's going to improve your power play and do what he does from the hash marks down in the offensive zone, and you've got some burners who are going to transport the puck between the blue lines to get him the puck in those areas in the offensive zone, then, there's going to be a market for him. It's the cost associated with it because he is a pending UFA. I mean, I don't have Minnesota in front of me here, but, you know, there's all kinds of rumors that I'm sure the Minnesota Wild will be at least be interested in acquiring Brock or talking to him in the offseason if he hits free agency. And, depending on where their money's at, and is that a team that with their injuries that they have right now, is that a team that might be interested in acquiring him now and maybe having a deal in the drawer potentially? But what do you get in return if you believe that your team is still can be a playoff team for this year? And the Canucks are right there. As bad as everything's been, and it just never seems to end. They're still hanging around.
Books, with where the Canucks are positioned, right? And we've sort of gone over the general shape of it. Something we were talking about, or that's been talked about in this market a little bit today, is the idea of them keeping him, right, beyond the deadline, with sort of this idea that, you know, they still might sign him ultimately, whether they make the playoffs or not. And sort of one issue that I wonder about bumping into is, doesn't that, like, it's not like a player's price usually goes down between, you know, March and July 1 if they're a pending UFA who's scored more goals than everyone but 48 other NHL players across the last 5 years.
Yeah, no, it's and then, of course, if you do end up being a playoff team and he contributes in playoffs, then, you know, you got another million or million and a half that you're going to add to the end of that number, whatever the number is right now, for sure. So that's it's delicate. You guys recognize it. So do I, as you know, in kind of a hockey operations room, you know, these are the things you're teeter tottering back and forth on it. And your owner is going to get involved in it too. And especially if you're looking at the projection of potentially extending them, it doesn't feel like that. So it doesn't sound like that. But listen, 12, he's played a game in playoffs last year. And if they do get in, and he does go off just even a little bit, he's going to get a lot more expensive. The one thing I would say is this, that if he has more than one team interested in, and I'm sure there will be when he tracks towards UFA status, and if the Canucks still own his rights, they'll give permission to, you'll be able to get something back. It won't be like there won't be a nothing burger, but you'll get something back that you might be able to turn into, you know, a depth piece through draft picks or whatever by just punting out his rights if it ends up not being a fit for Vancouver in the long haul. So, you know, I'm perplexed. I'm not going to deny it. I don't know. I can't trust Vancouver on any given day. I've tried to wrap my mind around the entire season here. It's an impossibility. If they're a better team tracking towards playoffs, if Brock Besser's playing to the best of his ability, is that the goal? Do we still believe that we can do some damage in playoffs? Because if you really don't believe that you can, then you got to do what's best for business.
So I don't believe that they can. I'm just going to go out and declare
it. I don't
it.
Think they can either. I don't see how you can turn it off and on. Like, there's just too much noise. You just can't do that. You got to be happier than this.
Yeah. Well, and also the way they're positioned, I mean, you're not likely to catch Colorado or LA at this point, given the quality of those teams and how far the Canucks are back. So you're looking at Winnipeg. But even if you were able to catch Colorado or LA, you're looking at Vegas or Edmonton, and I'll exactly. Just tell you the stats right here. It's 1-5. They're 1-5 in 6 meetings against those teams so far this year, and the goal differential in those 6 games is 27 goals against and 11 goals for, minus 16. What are we doing here?
Yeah, it stinks. It's not good enough. You're exactly right. I'm trying to speak in general terms, obviously, in terms of the discussions that will be going on behind closed doors. For me personally, if it's put on me just like, hey, Jason, do you think we're good enough to win a round of playoffs? No, I don't. I don't even know if we're good enough to get the playoffs, and our culture stinks right now. Last year, I thought the culture was tracking in a fantastic direction. You're going to pull the rope together, and we're going to battle together. We're going to enjoy doing it too. Not so much anymore. And Demko's out. Pettersson is just you know, Pettersson for now, and that's got to be addressed. There's just so much noise, guys. I just don't see how they could catch lightning in a bottle to win a round in playoffs. So when you say it that way, it's I've got everything on the table. Besser being moved will be obviously forefront there. I'm listening on Pettersson too, but it's such a depressed value of return right now, and who's going to want to invest in that? You know, we were talking about last night in the green room, you know, Sammy Cause and I, and you know, is a team like Montreal a team that would take a run at a Pettersson? Is it a Buffalo? You know, is Kevin Adams going to say, you know, I don't know what's going to happen there, but is that a team that would take a run at him? Because honestly, right now, if I'm a team that's tracking in a really positive direction and I got a good thing going culture-wise, I don't even know if I want to introduce that. Despite his potential upside, I don't know if I can trust that it's ever going to happen again. He might, as much as I hate to say it, his best years, his best production, there's a realistic chance he will never be the player that earned that contract. That's a reality.
Yeah, it's certainly a potential outcome, and man, it is scary for the Canucks to be staring down that potential outcome, and we'll see how it ultimately plays out with Pettersson. But, you know, in his, I don't want to say his absence, because he's still in the lineup, but the absence of real elite production from him, man, those last two games over the weekend without Quinn Hughes in the lineup, it was just so evident how much they lacked offensively, how much of a struggle it was for them to score. How do they need to go about addressing that? Maybe it's before the deadline here, but going into the offseason and then going into next season, how can they address the lack of scoring punch in their forward group right now?
Oh, great question. I mean, the guys that they added this offseason, and obviously Miller was part of the franchise at that time, but the guys that they added, you were expecting more than – you were hoping to get more than, you know, the 35 points, I believe, that the DeBrusque has produced up to this point in time. And it's going to be very, it's going to be delicate. There's some guys internally that you would hope they're going to be a year older and they might be able to, like, could Lekkerimäki turn into what Matt Coronato is doing right now in Calgary? Is that possible? If it is, well, that's a good news story. And that solves at least a secondary layer. But honestly, guys, you're going to have to go shopping for the type of player that's going to fit with whatever the strategy is, because right now I look at their lineup and it's kind of a melting pot of different things, isn't it? And that's where the Besser discussion becomes a little more of an issue, because as we said, he's not fast. He plays the game a certain way. You know, is Pettersson, if you have Pettersson to start the year again next year, and you've got obviously the DeBrusque is still there, hopefully a healthy Joshua, because nobody likes multi-million players that don't give everything they got. So what's the appetite in the room? Like, everybody's been sitting back watching the Miller and the Pettersson thing. Miller goes away. Pettersson still hasn't. Let's hope, you know, maybe he rebounds from here out to the end of the year. Let's assume he doesn't. What type of bad taste in the mouth does that leave in the room with the rest of the guys? That's a question that I think that has to be answered as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating end of the season and going into the offseason and that reset as well. And we'll see what comes out along the lines of what you're talking about there, Books. Thanks, as always, for the time. We will do it again next week.
Thanks for the therapy session, boys. I don't know that we're any further ahead than we were 25 minutes ago, but as always, I enjoy talking to you. Thank you.
One of these times, we'll figure out all the problems. We'll get it solved, Books. One of these times, we'll do it. Thank you, man.
All right, boys.
That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, and he joins us every Wednesday here on the show, weighing in on the Canucks. We'll take a break. Final segment of the show is up next. We will do the whiteboard to wrap things up here on a Wednesday here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.